The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Space, the great hope of humanity. The Venture Star, the future shuttle of America's space fleet, has completed its maiden launch. But the revelry won't last for long.
I repeat, Houston, Venture Star, we have a problem.
Houston, go ahead.
We are experiencing a problem with one of the APUs. We can't shut it down. Houston, we are now showing a fire in the APU.
But things are not what they seem.
What the hell went wrong, Bear? We plotted the impact from the radar tapes. Why isn't it there?
Well, I'm not really sure yet what crashed into the Pacific. And the Venture Star? I wouldn't be surprised if it's in China. Western China, to be exact.
The Venture Star wasn't destroyed. It was hijacked.
The plan is a long shot.
He wants the Venture Star back at all costs. And we're an expendable part of the equation, pure and simple. We're going to use the space shuttle Atlantis for a secret mission to destroy a series of nuclear-armed deep space missile launch platforms the Chinese have put into orbit.
But the consequences of failure are unthinkable.
Stop the Yankees from capturing the ship at all costs!
Jesus.
Atlantis. Stony Man number 45, Star Venture. Appearing now in the theater in your mind.
0. SRB ignition. Liftoff.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, Nanette Savard, David Coyne, Karen Carbone, Tim Carlin, Jim Lawson, Kate Torrey, Michael Replogle, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Doug Krenzlin, Nazia Chowdhury, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 23, Road Wars. The piece of paper was crumpled and stained, but it was still perfectly legible. Ryan laid it out on the kitchen table and read it through for the 20th time. It was now 2 days since the CD Pac-Man, passing through the small ville of Patriarch, had handed it to Ryan Carter.
Success! We'll stay around Seattle for 3 months. Come quick, hey.
The note had been on the road for just over 6 weeks before it eventually found Ryan, which gave him about a month and a half to make the long and dangerous overland trek to the far northwest of Deathlands to try to meet up again with his old friend Abe and his old leader, the Traitor. Ryan's hope was that he and the armorer, J.B. Dix, would be able to make the 1,500 miles to the northern Scific coast in a week or so, trouble permitting, take a few days to contact Trader and Dabe, and then all return securely to old New Mexico. Call it 3 weeks at the outside. That was the theory. As soon as he'd set his eye on the note, Ryan had known that he would have to go. Since he couldn't use the gateway to make a jump to Seattle, it was going to mean some hard traveling cross-country. It wasn't the kind of journey where he'd want to take Doc Tanner, Mildred Wyeth, or his son Dean with him. Jack needed some time to get his head together again, after the brutal slaying of his wife and baby. That meant someone had to stay behind and keep an eye on things. Christy was inarguably the best for that. And he needed someone to go with him on the road. Trader used to say that a man traveling alone traveled fastest, but that two good men traveling together would travel safest. John Barrymore Dix and Ryan Cotter had ridden and fought together for more years, mostly with the Trader, than either cared to remember. 5 feet, 8 inches tall, and 137 pounds soaking wet, JB had forgotten more about weapons than most people in Deathlands would ever know. Sallow, bespectacled, and terse, he seldom used one word where none would suffice. The room where Ryan sat carried the faint scent of the pre-dark brass oil lamp that he'd lit as soon as he closed the oak bedroom door behind him. But it was overlaid now with the wholesome smell of fried food. The plate in front of Ryan held 3 eggs over easy, with some strips of Jack's home-cured bacon, mushrooms and hash browns with fresh-baked bread and salted butter. Nobody else seemed to be stirring, though Ryan was sure he'd heard the sound of subdued conversation coming from the room shared by JB and Mildred. If they were to make an early start, Ryan knew that he'd soon have to rouse his old friend, but that meant waking the rest of the household. For a few moments, sipping at a scalding mug of black coffee sub, he enjoyed the solitude, a time out from the perpetual war of surviving in Deathlands, to sit and think and gather his private thoughts. 1,500 miles. They had the LAV-25 locked away in the large barn, and there was enough gas to take them a good part of their journey in the 8-wheeled light-armored vehicle. He and JB had checked out the few tattered maps available, trying to pick a good route that would keep them clear of any of the pestle frontiervilles that they knew from previous experience to be potentially hostile. The reputation of having been one of the Trader's lieutenants didn't always mean a smiling reception. And when you looked like Ryan Cotter, 200 pounds of honed muscle and over 6 feet of one-eyed mien, then folks tended to remember you. Ryan heard the floorboard creaking in the hall behind him, and his right hand dropped automatically to the butt of the big 6-hour P226.
Only me, my dear chum.
Join me in a cup of coffee?
I don't believe there'll be room in it for both of us. Nothing like the old jokes, Ryan. And that was nothing like one of the old jokes.
Ryan smiled, feeling a sudden rush of genuine affection for the old man. Old man? It was a recurring puzzle trying to work out how old Doc really was. With his mane of white hair and lined face, wearing an ancient frock coat with a strange green sheen across the shoulders and cracked knee boots, he looked to be closing in on 70. And the ebony sword stick with the Toledo steel rapier blade, the hilt a carved silver lion's head, gave him a 19th-century dandyish swagger. Dr. Theophilus Tanner had been born in South Stratford, Vermont, on February 14, 1868, so that would make him well over 200 years old. He had married Emily Chandler in June of 1891, and they had 2 children, Rachel in 1893 and little Julian 2 years later. With his doctorate of science from Harvard and doctorate of philosophy from Oxford University, England, Doc's academic career was already flourishing, until a bitter, leaden day in November of 1896. In another time, the scientists of the United States government were laboring with a highly secret series of experiments. Codenamed Operation Kronos, part of the over-Project Whisper, itself a small cog in the mighty machine of the totality concept, they were trying to travel men and women from past to future. And Doc was their star subject. Some of their failures were horrific enough to make a man vomit blood, so ghastly and inhuman were what came through the temporal gateways. You could count their successes on the fingers of both hands. And even some of them were of dubious